today is Vajra Shukla Chaturthi. This is the fourth day of the waxing moon in Vajra Mas. This is a very auspicious month of Vajra. Bhadra, in Sanskrit they call it Bhadra. We say August. But in this month, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, appeared in the Krishna Paksha Astami. Radharani appeared in the Shukla Paksha Astami. All of Radharani's Astasakis appeared in Bhadra Mas. The Queen of Garga Samhita, Lord Balaram, also appeared in Bhadra Mas on the, it's called Balaram Chot, which means Shasti, the sixth day, which is about 2 days from now. So today is the Ganesh Chaturthi, which means it's the birthday of Lord Ganesh. There's different festivals to worship Lord Ganesh throughout the year. Ganesh, Lakshmi, Mahapujan, which is, I believe, in Deepavali, Kartik Maina. People, they worship Ganesh and Lakshmi. They worship Ganesh to remove material obstacles. When there's no material obstacles, then you'll make lots of money. And to make sure that everyone worships Lakshmi Devi. So Ganesh is a very enigmatic god of India. Very, very famous, Ganesh Ganapati. The figurines and statues of Ganesh are very interesting. Half man, half elephant. Elephant's head and human's body. He's depicted as a very comical figure. Very healthy. Very robust, or rotund. Large, bulbous belly. Always eating laddus. And he's the lord of... contrast. Not contrast, but... what's the right word? He's the lord of inconceivabilities. He wants to show people how, when you approach transcendence, when you approach God, the impossible is possible. Ganesh is, of course, a devotee of God. He's considered to be a god. He's also a devotee of God. He has a family. He has a mother and father, Parvati and Shiva. He has a brother, Skanda Kartikeya. He has a role to play in this world. He's a delegated representative of God. He's a Vaishnava, he's a devotee. But sometimes he acts like God himself, playing a particular role on behalf of the Supreme Lord, Krishna. Very interesting personality. He's not only a member of this material world living side by side with everyone, especially favoring the human beings, but he's also favoring the pretas and bhutas and other associates of Lord Shiva that are in subtle bodies due to their bad karmas. They get the body of bhut or pret, pishacha. No gross body, but they have a mental body. Man, chitta, hankar, buddhi and hankar, this body they have, but they don't have a body of bones and flesh. Sometimes they're generically called ghosts. We say ghosts. But they have particular names in the Vedas, and each name describes a particular species or varieties of subtle beings, petries. That's like we say kinnaras and gandharvas and kimpurushas. Hanuman was a Kimpurusha. He's a Kimpurusha, but he's not a Kinnara. He's not a Gandharva. Gandharvas are human-like, but they have wings. Kimpurushas are human-like, but they may have a face of like a monkey, but they speak Sanskrit. And then the Kinnaras, they look like human beings. That's why they say they're called Kinnaras, K-I-N-N-A-R-A-S. But actually their physical characteristics is they look like human beings. You see them, they're very angelic and very, you might say, the Kinnaras are something like angels. because the Kinnaras, they have Kinnara means Kimnara. When someone sees one, they say, "What kind of human being is this?" Nara means human being. The Kinnara, so it's Kinnara means what kind. They look like human beings, but very subtle, but very angelic, like an angel, but they have wings, like a bird. Two arms, distinct arms. But Kim Purushas, they look like Purushas, they look like persons, but they have monkey face. They have a planet, Kim Purusha Loka, Kinnara Loka. Then the Gandharvas have no wings. They're completely like human beings, but their bodies are vaporous. Their bodies are only made of mind. But you can sometimes see them. Very rare, very highly sattvic developed beings can see the Gandharvas. Generally, sometimes people hear the music. Very sensitive beings, human beings, they can hear what is often told in modern vernacular, celestial sounds. New Age people sometimes say they hear the music of the music of the spheres. The Gandharvas, they make music, and they used to actually visit this planet. In Satyuga, these different levels of beings, they would interact with the earthly beings because earthly beings were sufficiently established in Satyagun and religious principles and purity of thought to attract such high level beings. We have a phrase in English you must have heard, birds of a feather flock together. Generally wealthy people don't associate with bungis and chummers and maitranis. These people clean the toilets. They don't mix. Rothschilds mix with Rockefellers, and it's like this. When human beings were in Satyuga, human beings were like, they were all Snat and Dharmas, they were all yogis and highly evolved in meditation and sattvic thought and living. So then they attracted the Gandharvas and Kim Purushas and Kinnaras. They were coming here, interacting, attending the yagyas, attending the functions, playing music and dancing. You read about the kings, the Gandharvas would dance for the kings in the court of Indra, in the court of the celestials, in the residence of Swarga Loka. Then these Gandharvas, they are regular performers there. And the Kim Purushas sometimes visit, or the Kinnaras. These are all higher beings. But they, in Kali Yuga, they don't come. The only type of beings that come here are the lower class beings. Because the vibration, the vibratory level of this planet is extremely tamasic in Kali Yuga. The energy that's being vibrated, the mental energy, the psychic energy, the physical energy, it's pervaded by this influence of Kali. It's a lower vibratory rate. So this lower vibratory rate attracts the lower beings. Patala, Rasatala, Alatala. And there's planets of the Rakshasas and Rakshasis and Pretas. They have Pitri Loka. They have different planets within 700 miles of the Earth and 1,000 miles. And they cannot come here very much in Satyuga because there's a shield of, we have this term in science of the ozone layer covering the Earth. Ozone is an element, oxygen, nitrogen, ozone. It's an ethereal element which is preventing the harsh alpha and beta rays of the sun penetrating our atmosphere and burning us to a crisp and causing skin cancer and all these things. And now due to air pollution and basically not really all these external factors, but due to the change in the vibration. The conscious vibration and the consciousness of the people has changed so much that it's altering the nature of the whole planet. So the ozone layer is becoming penetrated and diffused for more subtle reasons than what the scientists say. So now people are wearing sun protection factor 60, sun protection factor 45. UV, this, that, the other thing, because the sun... Although previously the sun is described in the Vedas In Satyuga, Treta-yuga, and Dwapara-yuga, the sun is described as Mitra. One name for the sun is Mitra. Mitra means friend. A friend doesn't give you cancer and kill you. A friend doesn't kill you. Cancer kills you. Skin cancer kills you. A friend doesn't do that. He's called Bandhu. He's called Mitra. He's called Divakara. Divakara, Konark. Many, many names. But there's many, one of the biggest names for the sun, he's the friend. He's the Bandhu. He gives the healing sun. The sun purifies and creates life. It's the beginning of the life cycle. It's the sun. And then the plants and the chlorophyll and the whole cycle of life depends on the interaction of sun rays and plant life and, of course, the touch of the soul and super soul. But he's withdrawing his favorable vibrations because we are demoniac. We are unfavorable. We are unfriendly. We are tamasic. So now the sun has become the enemy. Mitra has become Ari or whatever the word for enemy is. Shatru. Mitra has become Shatru. People now are afraid of the sun. They use umbrellas and sunscreen, and they're warned by their doctors, don't have exposure to the sun. You'll become burned to a crisp. Even if you have brown skin, it's dangerous now. Previously, if you had a lot of melanin in your skin, then you could deal with the absorbing all the rays. But now those rays are not friendly anymore. Therefore, lower birds of a lower feather are attracting lower birds of a lower feather. There's no protective layer over the earth. There's no sattva-gun encircling the earth. So these lower beings are able to penetrate the earth's planet. For example, if a country's defense measures are very weak, or they have BSF, Border Security Forces, they have a phrase in the country, I grew up in the country, good fences make good neighbors. If I have a beautiful yard, but I don't have any fence, and you have 10 cows, then your cows will come and eat all my vegetables and all my flowers and destroy my garden. But good fences make good neighbors. My fence keeps your animals out of my yard, and your fence keeps my animals out of my yard. So the good fences means our border is very strong, so the surrounding enemies can't attack us. But if our border is weak, they can come in any night with 10,000 tanks and take over Delhi. Because we have no security. What do we need security for? We go to sleep, party. You wake up and there's all Muslims taking over Delhi. From Pakistan. It's all about vibration. And vibration is fear, so that you react accordingly. So the earth planet, there is no vibration of sattva-gun to prevent the ignorant entities from coming inside. They're already there. They've always been there in every age. They have all their planets are surrounding the earth planet. Pitri Loka and Bhut Loka and all these places, they live there. But they can't come here. So they have no influence. Now, everywhere they're coming to this planet, they're appearing in people's family. They're taking over different bodies or getting gross bodies. They're influencing people to do all demoniac and ungodly things everywhere. It's basically a massive takeover. Therefore, from the beginning of time, the Lord has arranged various representatives to ensure the prosperous and safe life of the human beings if they make a covenant. They make a bondage with them. There's a synergy between the humans and the devas. The synergy is based on yajna and giving and taking, offering puja and yajna and somaras and all these things that the demigods like. And they reciprocate. So demigods like Lord Shiva and Brahma, Chandra, Surya, they're very important. In the traditional Hindu theology, they worship what is called Panchupasanam, Panch Devata. Vishnu on the top, Vishnu, then Shiva, then Parvati, then Surya, or the Dinesh and Surya. It's called Panchadevata. Panch Upasana. Upasana means worship. Upasana. Upasana. To be near, to sit near, to situate yourself near Vishnu or Shiva or Parvati or Ganapati or Surya. And each one plays an individual role in the success of human life and maintaining the sattvic vibration and the peaceful vibration, productive vibration for the human success and happiness. But whenever there's some disorder or disregard, where people say, we don't need these, we don't need Vishnu, we don't need Shiva, Parvati, we don't need them, we have science, then they become offended, they become unhappy, they withdraw their benedictions, they withdraw their blessings. This is what's happening now, everyone. Science is God, science is Vishnu, science is Ganesh. Science is the creator, science is the maintainer, science is the bringer of good fortune, science is the remover of all obstacles. Science is money, money is luxury, everything is science. But Ganesh and all these personalities, because ultimately behind all energy, there's the energetic. Behind all organization, there's the organizer. Behind all systems, there's the system analyst, or the system manager. Behind all creation, there's a creator. So behind all material energy, or behind matter, there is consciousness. And consciousness is an attribute of a living person. Supreme consciousness is the absolute. God, the absolute truth, the supreme consciousness, who has so many conscious units and conscious expansions that are running everything. Therefore, in Hindu theology, or what you say, Sanatana Dharma, all of these conscious entities, they have form, and they have names, and they have characteristics, and they have delegated powers, and they have personalities, as we do, but they're much more powerful and significant. We want to glorify Ganesh, who's a great devotee of the Lord. Lord Brahma is glorifying him in the Brahma Samhita. Lord Chaitanya said that Brahma Samhita is the very most important book for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So we have different books to describe about Lord Ganesh. We can hear, we'll be reminded, and then we'll describe Ganesh in this world as we hear about him and know about him. And then we'll hear about Ganesh in the spiritual world. Om Shri Ganeshaya Namaha.
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 There's one verse here. It says, Mushika Vahana Modaka Hasta Chamara Karna Vilambita Sutra Vamana Rupa Maheshwara Putra Vigna Vinayaka Pada Namaste. O Lord Vinayaka, the remover of all obstacles, O Son of Shiva, with a form which is very short, with a mouse as thy vehicle, with sweet pudding in your hand. Interesting translation. Modaka. Modaka is just translated as sweet pudding. Modak is actually a solid candy. A modak. M-O-D-A-K-A. Modak is like a lozenge, or like a candy, or like a sweet ball. It says it's like, here it's the translator saying it's like kheer. Pudding. Pudding is like kheer. With wide ears, let's say elephant ears, and long hanging trunk, I prostrate at thy lotus feet. Ganesh Chaturthi is one of the most popular Hindu festivals. It's the birthday of Ganesh. It is observed throughout India, as well as by devoted Hindus in all parts of the world. So you came from another part of the world to observe it here. Lord Ganesh is the elephant-headed god. The Ganesh is part of this, as I said, the inconceivability. It's called the Achintya. The Achintya aspect of God. God is a Hotsaja. He's beyond the senses. So, okay, you're a scientist. You know about physics, and you can measure everything, and you have your computer. So you take this mouse, Mushika. You heard it pronounced. Mushika Wahan. Mushika Wahan. The elephant rides on a mouse. So you're a scientist. Now you explain. You know all this chemistry and quantum. You use quantum mechanics. Use Einstein's theory of relativity. Use whatever you have in your hand. Fourth dimensional mathematics. Whatever. Just crack your head on it. Take the little mouse, run around your house stealing the cheese and stuff. And get a 3-ton elephant and put him on top of the mouse and tell the mouse to take him away. That's possible. Impossible. For your brain, impossible. Not mine. I'm Indian. We accept it. We believe it. Not only that, we go one step higher. We worship this guy. Actually, we should worship the mouse more. Because, you know, that mouse is amazing. I mean, it's not a big thing, that elephant. But the mouse is more, should get more, you know, he's getting second billing here. You know, the main star is Ganesh, but what about, we don't even know the name of the mouse, he's just Mushika. Lord Ganesh is worshipped first in any prayers, his names are repeated first before any auspicious work is begun, before any kind of worship is begun. He's the Lord of power and wisdom. Siddhi and Riddhi. He is the eldest son of Shiva and the elder brother of Skanda, the energy of Shiva. He's called the son of Shankar and Uma Devi. This is about his birth. And there's a different rendition in this other book. Once upon a time, Gauri was bathing and she created Ganesh from the chandan that was covering her body and placed him at the entrance of her house. And she said, "Don't allow anyone to come inside. I'm going to go for a bath." Meanwhile, Lord Shiva was out wandering around somewhere and he was coming home very thirsty. And this chokidar appointed by Parvati, Ganesh, he stopped Shiva and said, "You can't go." So then there was some fight, and Shiva became angry. And they cut off Ganesha's head, thinking he was an outsider. It was actually, there's a little footnote here, it was actually a very big fight. But Ganesh had a Shakti weapon, which was given to him by Gauri. So actually, in the first round, he defeated Shiva. Ganesh defeated Shiva, which shows you the usual moral of the story that women are more powerful than men. You know, they have the Shakti. Woman, female represents Shakti. So she gave him the Shakti weapon. Shakti, Shaktiman. The possessor of Shakti is Shaktiman. Radharani is a Shakti of Krishna. Lakshmi is a Shakti of Narayan. Parvati is a Shakti of Shiva. But she gave the Shakti weapon to this Chandan Nandana. Because Nandan means son. Like Nandanandan, son of Nanda. So his name, he was Chandanandan. Because he was the son of Rachandan. He created her, this story says Parvati created Ganesh from her Chandan, covering her body, the sandalwood paste in her body. It was a big fight and she was defeated. Then he called all the demigods. She went to the demigods and called Lord Vishnu. Then Lord Vishnu distracted Ganesh during the fight. Then Shiva was able to defeat Ganesh. Gauri found out that her son was bumped off. She was very aggrieved. And then she told Shiva, here it says somebody else, Shiva ordered his servants to go cut off the head of anybody that might be sleeping at that time with his head facing north. So by this instruction, we can understand that it's important, everything's important, even how you sleep. It's not good enough just to sleep, but you have to consider which direction you're pointing your head. So the Shastras advise us, if we want to attain wisdom, we should point our head in the easterly direction. If we want to attain good health in the time of sickness or recover our health, then we should point our head to the south while sleeping. If you want to get headaches and maybe even lose your head sometimes, sleep with your head pointed north. That's magnetic north, and that's not good for it. It upsets the magnetic balance of the body. One gets headaches. And if you sleep with your head pointing west, they say that's an insult to Yamaraj, so that he becomes more interested to take you for a walk. And of course, no one really wants to walk anywhere with Yamaraj, because all roads lead to Yamaloka when you go with him. So it's advised not to sleep that direction. So the servants of Shiva went to find somebody sleeping pointing north, and they only found one person, one elephant. So they made a sacrifice and brought the head, and Shiva did a little surgery over there. This is some very original surgery. Put the head of this elephant on the body of Ganesh. Then he made his son worthy of worship at all beginning of all undertakings, marriages, expeditions, studies, etc. He ordained that the annual worship of Ganesh should begin today. So anyone's going to initiate or inaugurate worship of Ganesh, they should begin today on his birthday. Sri Ganapati Arbab Titi Ghi. Without the grace of Sri Ganesh and his help, nothing whatsoever can be achieved. No action can be undertaken without his support, grace, or blessings. Now keep in mind, we're talking about material actions. We're not talking about sadhana or vidhi nisheda, shastra vidhi or nisheda, following the rules, the do's and don'ts of shastra, or guru seva, bhagavan seva, and all these principles and activities of sanatana dharma. Although vaguely in some cases they are connected with Ganesh, but they are independent also of the need for the help of Ganesh to execute these activities. Because that Ganesh is the lord of material activities and the execution thereof. The activities of bhakti, bhakti proper, Ram bhakti, Krishna bhakti, Vishnu bhakti. Bhakti itself is transcendental. It is gunatita. Gunatita means it's beyond the gunas. Has nothing to do with sattva-gun, rajagun, tamagun, which is the whole material world is moving on these three principles, raja, sattva, and tama. So Ganesh is playing a role within the modes of nature, with this prakriti. He's influential in this prakriti. Prakrit dham, called Durga dham, Devi dham. But beyond this is Vishnu dham, Hari dham, that is aprakrita, aprakrita dham, aprakrita, aprakrita vastu. Chinmaya Vastu, spiritual energy, transcendence, the divine realm. And Lord Ganesh is not needed there. What is needed there is, as it's said in so many places, Guru Kripa, Hi Kevalam. Guru Kripa is bhakti, or the blessings, at least from Vishnu bhakti. And a Vaishnav Guru, a Guru Kripa will actually be transcendental bhakti, which is the energizing force behind the activities of sadhana. The mercy coming from Guru and Mahajans and Acharyas, they are the energizing force. Guru Agya, Guru Shakti, Guru Sharanagati, Guru Samarpanam. They say, Man Tan Dan Guru Samarpanam. When one submits to Guru, Sharanagati, when one surrenders to Guru, then Guru's grace comes, Kripa. With that Kripa comes Shakti. Guru gives Agya. Guru Agya, order, command to engage in Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, in Navavida Bhakti, service of Krishna, Pujanam, Archanam, Swadhyaya, Tapa, Nam, Kirtan, Bhajan, Smaran, Seva, and all these different limbs and aspects of Vishnu Bhakti, Krishna Bhakti. With his order comes the Shakti to do it, which is all transcendental. There's no need for the intercession or the added ashirvad or ingress of Ganesh in any of these activities. Therefore, you don't see in any Vishnu or Vaishnava temples any Ganesh anywhere, nor is he required. But there are some Vedic rituals, Dasavida Sanskaras, Dasavida Sanskaras, Vivaha Sanskara, Garbhadhan Sanskara, Jata Sanskara, Nam Sanskara, Griha Pravesh, other functions. Simanta, making the hair part, Simanta Samskara, cutting the hair, Vidyakarana Samskara, writing with chalk the first syllable of the Sanskrit alphabet. then Ganesh will be involved, because these can be, on one level, material activities, because these are all within the realm of the physical body. Entering a house, parting your hair, education, name, birth, it's all physical body, material body. So Ganesh has some reign there, has some influence there, which we mentioned. So he's invoked there in the Vedic rituals and rites, even of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava will get married to another Vaishnava. So marriage is not a transcendental function. Marriage is the union of two bodies to produce children. And what other companion, whatever other thing. So that's a material thing. So therefore Ganesh is there. Even in a Vaishnava marriage, there's Ganesh worship, briefly. When we're talking about Vishnu Bhakti in the service of God, there's no need, Vishnu, because it's not material. It's called Atma Dharma, not Deha Dharma. So there's no need. You understand the difference. Atma Dharma depends on Mahajans, transcendentalists, Guru, Parampara, and Vishnu. Because Bhakti is transcendental. It's from beyond this world. It's not produced in this world. It's not of this world. Bhakti takes you out. Bhakti comes into this world, comes into your heart and consciousness, and takes you out, transforms your heart and consciousness, transforms your mental, subtle being, transforms your whole existence, and takes you to the Paravyam, Vaikuntha Dham, transcendental realm. So we just say, hello Ganesh, goodbye Ganesh. So one that, someone is Niskinchan Sadhu or Nirapeksha, Nirapeksha Sadhu, he never has any intercourse at all with Ganesh in his whole existence. From 5 years old, he starts doing bhakti. There's no marriage, there's no garbhan on samskar. There's what he's just absorbed in bhakti from the age of 5. Verse by Prahlad Maharaj. Komara Chrit Pragya Dharma Bhagavatamiha. Prahlad Maharaj is a young boy in the Bhagavatam, 7th canto. He's saying from the beginning of youth, 5 years old, Komara, we should do Bhagavad Dharma. So some people do. But those other poor folks, like ourselves, if we have to go through the different ashramas, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, then we will intercourse or have different interactions with Lord Ganesh, as you must be aware of in your own lives. In his first lesson in the alphabet in Maharashtra, a child is initiated to the mantra of Lord Ganesh, Om Shri Ganeshaya Namaha. Only then is he taught the alphabet. These are names of Ganesh. Dumara Ketu, Sumuka, Ekadanta, Gajakarnaka, Lambodhara, Vignaraj, Ganadyaksha, Falachandra, Gajanana, Vinayaka, Vakratunda, Siddhi Vinayak, Surpakarna, Haramba, Skanda, Purvaja. That's interesting. Purvaja, very interesting name. Skanda is his brother. Purva means before, and Jan means birth, Janma. One who was born before is Skanda. Skanda Purvaja. He's also known as Mahaganapati. His mantra is Om Gam Ganapatye Namaha. Spiritual aspirants who worship Ganesh as their tutelary deity repeat this mantra, or they say, Om Shri Ganeshaya Namaha.
Om Shri Ganeshaya Namaha.
These are called bijam mantras. Ring, ring, rang, rung, cling, shling, gung, aing. Aing is the bijam mantra for Saraswati. Aing, A-I-M, aing. So these get a little tricky sometimes. The devotees of Ganesh also do japa of the Ganesh Gayatri mantra. Well, this is Ganesh Gayatri. Tat purushaya vidmahe bhakcha tundhaya dhimahi tanno danti prachodayat tat purushaya vidmahe. Because Gayatri are characterized by 3 action verbs, vidmahe, dhimahi, and prachodayat. So whatever it is, it's vidmahe, dhimahi, and prachodayat. There's Kam Gayatri and many, many different mantras. Radha Gayatri, Kam Gayatri, Ganesh Gayatri. Tat purushaya vidmahe vakra tundhaya dhimahi tanno dhanti prachodayat. Lord Ganesh is an embodiment of wisdom and bliss. He is the Lord of the Brahmacharis and he is the foremost of celibates. That's quite a feat, because usually they say if you eat a lot then you become a little agitated. Says in Yoga Shastras, because when the belly becomes very full, it puts pressure on the nerves, because the nerves that pass to the genital, male genital, is passed in the region under the belly. So when the belly is too much distended, then it irritates those nerves, which causes agitation, sex agitation. That's why the yogis say, in Yoga Shastras, they say there's a straight line. They say, tongue, jiva, udar, pashta. Oh, pashta. Pashta means genital. Straight line, tongue, belly, genital. But it actually goes like this, man, jiva, udar, then upashta. If the mind is controlled, then the tongue is controlled. If the tongue is controlled, the belly is controlled. If the belly is controlled, then the sex drive or appetite or that is controlled. Now, we usually see, I've never seen a picture of a skinny Ganesh. He has a vehicle, a small mouse, not a big mouse. Remember, it says a small mouse here. Don't get confused. He's residing deity, the Muladhara Chakra. That's interesting. He sits on a mouse, but he himself is the chakra of the sitting place. Mula means the base, the root. There's seven chakras in the human psychic human system in yoga psychology. And the base of the spine, which is analogous to the spine, although it's not a bone, it's actually a vortex of psychic nerve. It's a vortex. There's seven vortexes at the intersection of psychic energy and psychic nerves, nadis in the body. Nadi. Nerve, equivalent of something like nerve currents, but it's more psychic. It's prana. It's more subtle than nerve energy. It's the refinement of breath. You take breath, the inhale of breath, and within, there's a very thin stream inside of breath. It's called prana. You say pranayama. There's a difference between air and breathing and prana, and then what we call this stream, this pranic stream that's inside. And that's very refined, very fine element, the prana. And it becomes, let's say, distorted. The prana becomes distorted and contaminated by the atmosphere. Therefore, the yoga shastras, they prescribe that if you want to avail yourself to a higher content of prana, you have to go where prana is more available. Prana is more available in the air on the banks of oceans, or let's say the banks of rivers, or the shores of oceans, or mountaintops. Consequently, most of your ashrams or meditative places are on the banks of rivers, Ganga, Saraswati, Jamuna, or mountaintops, or caves, or ocean sides, because the prana content of the air is higher there. So the yogis, that's why they go to the mountains, because that's the highest content of prana. They go to the mountains to subsist on the prana. They can actually subsist. They could, now the prana is so contaminated with air pollution, worldwide air pollution, I doubt they can exist. In previous ages, thousands of years ago, yogis can go to the mountains and not. They could draw water from the prana, draw food from the prana, everything from prana. They're called breatharians in English. They could just go for 30 years and without any water, external water, or any external food, just by breathing, extracting from prana. Again, another inconceivability, according to modern medical science, but how much do we know? This is what they say. So this is the first chakra, the Muladhara chakra. This is the psychic center, which is analogous to the Kundalini Shakti. That's where she resides. He is the Lord of all removes all obstacles in the path of the spiritual aspirant. It means material obstacles. Because in generally, in the yoga system, Ashtanga yoga system, or Gyan yoga system, or karma, any type of spiritual pursuit where you're trying, where it's called Aroha Panta. Aroha Panta means the ascending path. Aroha, ascending. By my physical strength, by my mental control, by my powers of meditation, by my physical gymnastics, by my restraint and control of my senses, I will lift myself up, I will become adept, I will learn to levitate, I will learn to meditate, I will learn to fix my mind on Brahman or Tattvamasi or Soham. And therefore, I'll have some instructor or some textbooks or some Vedanta Sutra or Mahavakya to meditate on Tattvamasi, Soham, Sarvam Kavadam Brahma, etc. This is called the Mahavakya, a Vedanta Sutra. But ultimately it's me, it's my power, it's my doing, Aravapanta, ascending path. Therefore, for me, there's many obstacles in front of me, the material energy, my family, the material elements, material objects, woman or man, the many obstacles, many enemies, and many hurdles to pass. I need some help to overcome all these things. So therefore, that's why he said he removes the obstacles on the path of the spiritual aspirant. These type of spiritual aspirants, because he deals with material success, he removes all material obstacles so you can make advancement. Because for everyone but the bhakta, this material world is an obstacle to transcendence. But for the bhakti yogi, there is nothing material. There is no material world. Everything is spiritual. And he learns the art of spiritualizing. Nirbande Krishna Sambande Yukta Vairagya Yuchate. Nirbande Krishna Sambande. I have no relationship with anything in this world. But everything has a relationship with Krishna, Krishna Sambande. I do not own anything in this world. I don't even own my own body. I have not created anything in this world. I have not created my own body. Nor have I created this world. But someone has. There's a beginning point of everything. You trace it back. So if you trace back the beginning point of me and the world and all the objects in it, God, the absolute truth, the absolute being, everything belongs to him. With bhakti yogi, he learns the art of dovetailing. It's his world, offer it to him. It's his body, engage it in his service. These are his objects or his people, engage them in Krishna's service. Yukta vairagya yuchate. Yukta vairagya. Vairagya, I'm detached, but yukta, I connect everything in relationship with Krishna. So there's no obstacles for me. There's no difficulties for me. So I don't need Ganesh. I don't have to ask, oh Ganesh, remove all the obstacles so I can do bhakti. Bhakti is transcendental. It's on another plane beyond the obstacles. And I don't have any obstacles. What are the obstacles? Because obstacles means you see there's something, there's me and there's my goal. And you're in the way of my goal. Oh Ganesh, please remove this obstacle to my goal. To merge in Brahman, Brahma Suja Mukti, or to acquire mystic cities, Anima City, Prapti City, etc. So these are obstacles. But for the bhakti, there's no obstacles. Everyone is Krishna's servant. Everything belongs to Krishna. I engage everything and everyone in Krishna's service. All are friends. I am surrounded by friends. I have no enemies. I have no obstacles. I have no enemies. So there's no need for Ganesh. You don't see his role in the bhakti path. He is called Vigna Vinayaka. His bija mantra is Gun. That's interesting. G for Ganapati. G for Ganesh. And G for Gung. Gung. Sung. Sung. Gung. Gung. It is pronounced to the rhyme with the English word sung. He is the Lord of harmony and peace. If we chant Hare Krishna and serve Krishna, we'll automatically be peaceful. Because we recognize that everything, we recognize that he's the owner of everything, the enjoyer of everything, and controller of everything. Bhaktaram yaga saptapasam yat sarvaloka maheshwam suridam sarvabhutanam yatamam chantamichati. So, and another verse is there in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Bhakti Naishkama Ateva Shanta Bhukti Kami. Bhukti and Mukti and Siddhi Kami. Anyone who wants liberation or sense enjoyment, he is, all of these people are not peaceful, but Krishna Bhakta Naishkama Ateva Shanta. Certainly, Eva. He is peaceful. Why? Because he has nothing. He doesn't want anything. What do I want? It's all Krishna. Just serve Krishna. He's Nishkam. He doesn't have any separate desires from the desires of the Lord. Ganesh ki jai, Om Ganapatyaya, Om Ganapatyaya Namaha. So he's out of all these things. His two feet represent the power of knowledge and the power of action. The elephant head is significant, and this is the only figure in nature that has the form of the symbol for Om. So if you draw on a piece of paper, if you draw the elephant's head looking from the front, and you have the ears, And you have the trunk going down. The trunk usually goes down like this and it goes up like that. And then the shape of the head, it's something like the syllable when you draw Om. There's the circle and Om. When you're looking from the front, I don't mean side view, profile, I mean front. You're looking from the front. Usually his trunk goes like this and he curves it up like this. So Om, when you write Om, it goes like this. You little stretch of the imagination, but at least you can stretch it. The significance of riding on a mouse is a complete conquest over egoism. The holding of the Ankush represents his rulership of the world. It's a symbol of divine royalty. Riding on a mouse, which is one of nature's smallest creatures, and having the head of an elephant, the biggest of all animals, denotes that Ganesha is the creator of all creatures. An elephant is a very wise animal, so he's the embodiment of wisdom. Very interesting stuff in this world. He's the lord of Gana. He's called Ganapati because he's the lord of groups. Groups of elements, groups of senses. He's the head of the followers of Shiva, or the celestial servants of the Lord. There's 12 groups, or Ganas. The Bhutas, the Pretas, Vishachas, Vinayakas. That's why they call them Siddhi Vinayak. There's a group of living entities called Vinayakas. Dakinis. There's 12 different groups of subtle beings, and he's the leader of them. Vaishnavas also worship Lord Ganesh. His two powers are Kundalini and Vallabha, the power of love. That's interesting. Vallabha is one of the powers of Ganesh. This is called a busted belly lila. It's very important on this day not to look at the moon. The moon rises in the morning about 8 o'clock. This morning it's in the sky right now, which we can't see very well. And it sets about 8:30 tonight. We could see it after sunset, but don't see it. Because there's a story why we shouldn't look at the moon. And if you look at the, he says if you look at the moon today, then you'll lose your good fortune and bad rumors will be spread about you. So it says he's very fond of balls of rice flour with a sweet core inside. On one of his birthdays, he was going around house to house accepting the offerings of this sweet ball. He ate a whole lot of these sweets. He sat on his mouse and started moving at night. Suddenly the mouse stumbled because it saw a snake and became frightened. As a result, Ganesh fell off his mouse. Sometimes you get in your car and you crash. Roll over the car or something. So he rolled off his mouse and he fell out. And what happened? His belly busted open. And inside his belly, because he has a habit, he doesn't like to chew because it takes too long. If you chew the sweets, then you can't eat too many and you don't know how long they're going to be served out. Because people, they come around once, you like something, then twice. How many times do people come around? So he told you, I take one, and then they come around a second time. You take two. So they, people aren't going to come forever. So the idea is that when Ganesh is being served, he takes lion's share, or elephant share, or whatever share you want to say, elephant lion share. He takes as much as possible, and doesn't waste time chewing. Because if you chew, then the guy moves on. And, okay, he had one. Ganesh was like this, and he rolled his mouse. Busted open his belly and all these sweets came popping out. So when he was doing this, he was stuffing those sweets back in his stomach. And then that snake that spooked the mouse and caused him to roll his mouse and roll over. Ganesh grabbed that snake and he used him as a rope to tie up his belly because it cracked open. So it was like a tourniquet. He tied it around his belly to hold all the sweets in. But when the moon, of Chandradeva, the moon god, he was looking at this and he started laughing heartily. Who wouldn't, actually? Imagine if you're up in a skyscraper looking down on the ground, saw some big elephant fell off a mouse, and that alone is enough to make you laugh. But then he rolls his mouse and it pops his belly and all these sweets come rolling out and they start rolling down the street. And he's running down after the sweets and stuffing them back in his belly. I mean, it's a tremendously humorous scene. I mean, Chandradeva is a human person and a demigod. So he was laughing at this rather unseemly behavior. Or no, this annoyed Ganesh, and he got very angry, so he broke off one of his tusks and he threw it against the moon. And he cursed the moon that no one should look at the moon on his birthday. And if they do, they'll get a bad name, ill repute, and a lot of bad luck. If by chance someone does look at the moon today, the only way he can be free from the curse is by repeating or listening to the story of how Lord Krishna cleared his character regarding the Shamantaka jewel. This story is quoted in Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what it says in the Hindi Panchan. There's even a mantra that says, Prasena, Om Sring Prasena, something or other. Because Satyajit was a sun god worshipper, and Suryadeva was very pleased with him and gave him the Shamantaka jewel, which is a very mysterious jewel, some type of ruby or emerald or something, a very large jewel. And whoever worshipped this jewel would actually produce gold. It produced about 80 kilos of gold every day, which is a good amount of gold. Whoever was worshipping this stone, Shamantaka jewel. Satyajit lived in Dwarka, became fabulously wealthy. Krishna went one day and told Satyajit, why don't you donate this jewel to the king of Dwarka? The king of Dwarka is King Ugrasen. He was the ruler of Dwarka. Ugrasen is the father of Kamsa, who was put in jail in Mathura by Kamsa. And after Kamsa was killed, Krishna liberated his Ugrasen and brought him to Dwarka to be the manager. Basically, Krishna, of course, is the king of Dwarka, Dwarkadish, God. But the managing director, you could say, the actual ruler, was called Ugrasen, King Ugrasen. There's Surasen and Ugrasen. Krishna suggested that to Satyajit, and Satyajit said, forget it. No way. As most people would do nowadays. If you had the facility to make 80 kilos of gold every day, and someone came and told you you should give away that facility, I would doubt you would give it away too fast. So what happened is that Satyajit had a brother named Prasena. Prasena said, listen, I want to wear your necklace and go for a ride in my sports car and show off this necklace. Of course, they didn't have sports cars, but they had horses. So he hopped on his horse and he went for a ride in the forest. Then the forest saw this glittering, the lion in the forest saw this glittering necklace and this big horse, so then and of course, the lion is very proud, and they say in English, it takes one to know one. The lion is very proud, so he saw this Prasena was also very proud, proudly wearing his brother's jewel, Shamantaka, and proudly mounting his horse and proudly riding through the forest. So the lion thought, you're very proud, and I think I should reduce your pride a little bit. So the lion jumped on the horse and then ate Prasena and left the necklace. And that was a lot of ruckus and turmoil. Meanwhile, Jambavan, the king of the bears or whatever, he was in his cave sleeping and he got disturbed from his rest. And as you know, no one likes to be stirred from their rest. What is this noise? And the lion was roaring and gloating over his victory. And then he's also very proud, Vikshiraj. He said, what is this? You're making a big noise? Haw, haw, haw. Disturbing my rest? Are you stupid? And then Vikshiraj knocks him on the head and killed him. He said, what's this stupid thing he's carrying in his mouth? He's carrying his necklace. He saw this necklace lying there. But he picked up the necklace and said, I'll give this to my kid, he can play with it. So he bought the necklace. Vikshiraj went in the cave and gave it to his kid, and a nurse was there. Even Vikshiraj had a few maids, for the wife. So the nursemaid was there taking care of the baby bear. So then I was okay, fine. Now Krishna, meanwhile, now back at the ranch, or let's say back in Dwarka, the brother didn't come back, and the horse didn't come back, and the jewel didn't come back. So Satyajit wasn't so worried about his brother, but he's more worried about his necklace, as people are these days. Brothers are dispensable, but wealth is indispensable. At least that's what most people think. So he didn't get his necklace back, and he says, listen, I know what happened. That Krishnaji, he came and asked me for this necklace, and I refused to give it to him, to give to Ugrasen. So I bet that he followed my brother into the forest and bumped him off. Or he hires some mafia guys to do it because he's too chicken or something, whatever. You know, he hired some people to bump him off, and he stole that necklace. He had an eyes on my necklace. He had eyes on my necklace. I'm sure that Krishna. So he went down to the local club or whatever. He started spreading rumors. Hey, this Krishna killed my brother, stole my necklace. So he spread these rumors all over Dwarka. Now all the queens of Dwarka were going here and there, and everyone was going, ooh, you know, your husband's a murderer. What have we got? And everyone was giving evil eye to Rukmini and Satyabhama in the marketplace and spreading bad rumors and saying, oh, you know, making faces and ostracizing them. So they felt bad. And Krishna was feeling all these rumors are spreading all over Dwarka. Even God gets rumors spread about him. God is omniscient. He's all perfect. He's all knowing. And even in Krishna Lila in Dwarka, they're spreading rumors about God. God suffered from ill repute. Even God suffered from character defamation. But he didn't want to leave it at that. So he went out to search, find out the situation. He rode on a horse, and then he investigated the situation. He found the dead horse lying there. He found the lion. He saw a few little ribs and bones and stuff of the brother of Satyajit. We're saying there's a few bones lying here and there. Then he searched more, and he followed these drops of blood that were dripping from the fur of Jambavana when he went back to his cave. Then he assessed that whoever killed these guys went in the cave, and maybe the gem is in there. So Krishna went in the cave, and the kids saw him. Oh, daddy, mommy. You know, who's this guy? Forearms. Because when Krishna went in the cave, he went in with forearms. When Dwarkadish is with his wives, he has two arms. But when he goes to battle, then he has forearms, Dwarkadish. So the kid was thinking, wow, this is a funny-looking bear. I've never seen a bear with four arms. I've seen two-armed bears, but not. Then he's a blue bear. So he became scared, naturally, and he cried out, daddy, daddy. And Jambavan came and said, what's this? You're scaring my kid? So then he said, who are you anyway? Get out of my house. You know, what are you doing? You don't have any invitation over here. So he said, look, I'm taking this gem with me. He said, no, you're not. That's my kid's plaything. So they started a big fight. And they went outside because they didn't want to fight in front of the kid. You know, it's not good to do like that. No, they were inside, actually. They were inside the cave because Krishna came with some of the panchayat. Some of the panchayat came with him to verify the situation and testify in his behalf. Some senior members of Dwarka, they came with Krishna, an entourage. He said, listen, I'm going in this cave and I'll square up everything and come back. So they waited for 12 days and Krishna didn't come back. Interesting, again, 12. And they said, well, he didn't come back. He must have went to never return land of no return. So they went back to Dwarka and said, very bad news. Krishna went in the cave and that was it. We stayed 12 days. He didn't come back. 12 days is like a yuga. It's like a lifetime. It's a measurement. An eon, 12 years is equal to an eon or a lifetime or an epoch or a yuga, 12 years. Yugayatam dameshina chakshashavarishayatam. Everyone's crying, all the queens are crying. Meanwhile, Krishna's in the cave and he fought for 27 days and 27 nights, non-stop with Jambavan. And Jambavan, or Rikshiraj, he's also called Jambavan, he was thinking, who is this? I can't defeat him. And Krishna was thinking, who is this? I can't defeat him. And after 27 days, Jambavan realized that this must be my invincible master, because Jambavan lives for many yugas. So he was living in Treta Yuga. And he was an ally of Lord Ramachandra in his fight against Ravana. Jambavan and Hanuman and Sugriv, and these different monkeys and bears and jungle creatures. He said, I can't defeat you, you're indefeatable. And Krishna was saying, I can't defeat you either, you're indefeatable. Because there's two indefeatable personalities in this world. One is Bhagavan and one is Bhakta. Krishna Sanjaya is telling in the end of the Bhagavad Gita, the last verse in Bhagavad Gita, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partha Dhanurdhara, Tatra Shiva Jayabhutir, Dhruva Nityamatir Mama. Sanjaya is summing up, Sanjaya is speaking to Dhritarashtra. He's telling about the upcoming battle which is about to begin between the Kauravas and Pandavas. And he says, listen, my dear Dhritarashtra, Your beloved Duryodhana and your 99 other sons are going to go to the kingdom of Yamaraj. I'm not coming back. Because Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Yatra Parta Dhanordhara Dhanordhara, wherever there is Krishna, Yogeshwara, the master of all yogis, and wherever there is Dhanordhara, Gandivadhara, the holder of the bow, Arjuna, wherever there is Bhagavan Sri Krishna, Bhagavan, and the combination of Bhakta. Bhakta means Arjuna. Then what do you have? Tatra Shir Vijayo Bhutir. Tatra Shir Vijayo Bhutir. Vijay. Vijay Krishna. Vijay Sri Krishna, Vijay Bhakta. Vijay Arjuna. You have supreme victory morality. Dhruva Nitir Matirmana. Dhruva Niti. You have extraordinary determination. Dhruva Nitya. And precision and determination, power, resourcefulness, the supreme morality. Basically, he's indefeatable. Arjuna is indefeatable, and Krishna is indefeatable. You cannot defeat Arjuna, and you cannot defeat Krishna. You cannot defeat Bhagavan, and you cannot defeat Bhagavan's devotees. Bhagavan is known as Achyuta, and the devotee is known as a member of the Achyuta Gotra. When you become a bhakti, you become Achyuta Gotra. Gotra means parivar, family. No more Kasyap Gotra, Kapila Gotra, Gotam Gotra, Bhargava Rishi Gotra, Lagalaga Gotra. This is all Sharir. This is Deha Gotra. Deha, but Atma Gotra. Atma Gotra, the family of the Atma, the soul. It's not in Dharma, Achyuta Gotra. Here we have Jambavan, who is a Rambhakt, Shiva Bhakta, fighting Krishna, who is Ram. Ramadi Murti Shikulani Amena Tishtam Na Navatana Makaro Govinesha Kintu Krishna Swayam Samadavat Panaman Pumanyu Govinda Madi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So now we have Jambavan, who is a devotee, and we have Krishna, who is the Lord. So who's going to win? Krishna didn't defeat Jambavan, Jambavan didn't defeat Krishna. This is what the story in Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Puran, is telling this. Because Krishna realized, this is my devotee, I cannot defeat my devotee. And Jambavan realized, this is my Lord, I cannot defeat my Lord. The Lord is indefeatable, the devotee is indefeatable. At any rate, Krishna got he really won big. Krishna won, although he was a draw. He won the friendship of his old devotee, old wine and new bottle, same Jambavan, but new Ram. Machandra had four arms also when he was fighting. But now he has four arms, but he came in blue. He said, yeah, this is like Kali Yuga, new color, new age. I got tired. And I wear that green dress in Treta Yuga. But now it's Kali Yuga. So I wear a blue dress. It's a dark age. So I come in a dark form. I mean, of course, it's the end of Dwapara. Krishna came in the Dwapara, but ushering in the Kali Yuga. And Ramachandra's Treta Yuga, which is the silver age, he came in the green. This is so, Krishna got the Shamantaka jewel, and not only did he get that, but then Jambavan felt so happy and thrilled to be with his Lord, and felt a little bad that he didn't recognize him at first and was fighting him. He says, listen, I want to give you my jewel-like daughter. I have one jewel-like daughter. This Ratnakanya, and her name is Jambavati. Krishna gladly accepted the offering of charity, Kanyadan, took her back to Dwarka and said, guess what? I got a couple jewels here. So he went to Shamantaka, he went back to Satrajit and said, I think you're more interested in this kind of jewel. So you can have this back and you're a good worshiper of the sun. But I think this other jewel is more to my liking. And my appetite is more satisfied over here. So he kept Jambavati with him, and Krishna married Jambavati. Became one of Krishna's eight primary queens. Krishna Dwarka Leela ki, Ganapati ki. So Krishna, that's what's going to happen to anyone who looks at the moon today. They'll have to go through this whole story. Ganesh and Subramaniam, his younger brother, once had a fight. Who was the elder of the two? I think you know this story. So they went to their father and said, listen, who's older, me or Skanda? But Shiva said, listen, whoever can make a tour of the whole world, do parikrama of the whole world and come back first to the starting point, he has the right to be the elder. Subramaniam flew off in his vehicle, which is a peacock, to circumambulate the entire world. But Ganesha is much more wise. Because someone might ask, If your race car is a mouse, your race car is an 800 Maruti, and my race car is a 16-cylinder Ferrari, who's going to win the race? Obviously, the Ferrari will win the race. So your race car is a mouse, and my race car is a peacock. So what to speak of that maybe that even the peacock eats the mouse, because peacocks do eat mice, and they do eat snakes. A mouse is like a pakora, and a snake is like a samosa. It's not any problem for them. But who are you going to put your money on here? So what's more important, wisdom or power?
Wisdom.
What's more powerful, I should say, wisdom or strength? Ganesh, the wise Ganesh, went in loving worshipfulness, which is interesting English, around his divine parents. He, instead of going around the world, he did Parikrama, or Pradakshina, of Shiva and Parvati. And Shiva said, "Oh my Ganesh, how can I give you the prize? You did not circumambulate the entire world." Ganesh said, "No, that's true, but I've gone around you, and you're my parents. You represent the entire manifested universe." Thus, the dispute was settled in favor of Lord Ganesh, who was acknowledged as the elder of the two brothers. Mother Parvati gave him a fruit as a prize for victory. Ganesh is also called Ganapati. Gana, of course, means, like we say, Sakigan. Sakigan means a group of Sakis. He's the lord of the Ganas, who are the lesser demigods or attendants who control the functions of the sense organs. That's very interesting. We read in other parts of the Vedas that every material element, every material machine or mechanism, whether it's the material machine, a mechanism of our physical body, or this larger physical body of the universe, or this planets and stars and clouds and all these things, or the senses of the body, they're all controlled by persons and by consciousness. Consciousness is actually the innervating or the force behind all movement. Ultimately, it's will. Even the Christians say that, "Our Father art in heaven, hallowed, thy will shall be done on earth as it is in heaven." Willpower means Ichha Shakti. So willpower, Ichha Shakti means this is the energy of a person, or one of the attributes of consciousness, willing. Behind every actual action, there is some willpower, a wish to make it happen, a wish to make it move, so that's consciousness. So there are demigods that are controlling the different senses, the group of our senses, the gana, indriyagan. Indriyagan means the group of senses, the eyes, the nose, the ears, the tongue, the hands. This is the indriya. And he is the lord of those various demigods. According to Bhagavata Tattva, the word gana means a collection of something that can be counted or comprehended. Ganapati is the lord or ruler of categories. He's the lord of thresholds, which means entrances. Entrances into new dimensions. That's very interesting. Generally, in the Shilpa Shastras that are guiding the construction of temples, especially Vaishnava temples, but even Shiva temples, you see, above the threshold of the temple, there will be one murti of Ganesh. This is when the six Goswamis built their temples of Govindaji and Madan Mohan and Gopinath. You'll see today, in fact, in the Govindaji temple, the new one, on the right-hand side, when you walk in, there's a very large murti of Ganesh on the ground level. But above the door, there's always a murti of Ganesh. When you go to Jayapur, you'll see, and everywhere. And also in the temple of Radhagiridhari and Radhakund. There's one temple, Radhagiridhari and Radhakund. So he's the lord of the entrance into new dimensions. Griha Pravesh means threshold or entrance into a Griha Pravesh. But here, he's taking a rather esoteric meaning of not only new space, new dimensions, because dimension, what is the material world? The material world is only three dimensions, length, width, and depth. Fourth dimension is consciousness. Length, width, and depth, it only measures insentient matter, dead stuff. There's three dimensions here, and there's only three dimensions here. There's no difference between the table and the human body. You have length, you have width, you have depth. That's all? There's something more. Chitta, Chaitanya, consciousness. That's the fourth dimension. But that's within the context of this Kuntadam, anxious world. The anxious world, the exploitive world, this earthly domain, this plane of the earth, the plane of exploitation, prakriti. But the aprakriti dham, there's these four dimensions here, and when we enter the paravyam, or spiritual, that's called fifth dimension. The entrance into new dimensions. The Ganapati is the, for the spiritualist, he takes him from the lower dimension to the higher dimension, from the material dimension to the spiritual dimension. It's not unusual in India that as we enter a new space or house, we may see an image of Ganesh above the door or nearby to give blessings to those who enter. He's a guardian of the doorways. This is the case in many Vedic temples. As we first enter the temple, we see a deity of Ganesh to whom we pray for blessings and the removal of obstacles in our devotion or the rituals that we do inside the temple. Ganesh is considered the lord of astrology. He is said to know the language of the stars and the destinies of every living being. Thus astrologers also petition Ganesh to pen such knowledge to them. Whenever you go, you get some astrology, Janma Kundali done, there's always some Om Sri Ganeshaya Namaha, some mantra there to Ganesh or some figure of Ganesh, or even in the yearly, you have that yearly Hindi panchang. It says somewhere, Sri Ganesh Shamba Guru Baya Namaha, Guru Boy Namaha. What does it say? Sri Ganesh Amba. Sri Ganesh Shamba Guru Yona Ganapati Ki Jaya. Ganesh is said to be the writer of the scriptures in the Mahabharata. He was Vyasadeva's scribe and he wrote the Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam as Vyasadeva dictated it. You can see the cave where this happened at the place called Mana, in the holy place of Badrinath in Badrikashram. Gajanana means elephant face. Gajadipa means lord of the elephants. Jeshtaraj, the king of the elders. He has two wives. Here are the two wives of Ganesh, Siddhi and Riddhi. And what do we say? What do we say about Radharani? Lord Shiva glorifies Radharani in the Radhakripa Kataksha. Apara Siddhi Riddhi Digda Satpadangalinake Kadakrish Siamam Kripaka Dakshavajnam. Apara Siddhi Riddhi Digda Satpadangalinake. Apara Siddhi, he's saying, Lord Shiva, the father of, he's the father-in-law of Siddhi and Riddhi. The father-in-law of Siddhi and Riddhi. Why is he the father-in-law? Because Shiva is the father of Ganapati. And who are the wives of Ganapati? Siddhi and Riddhi. So who's the father-in-law of Siddhi and Riddhi? Shiva. So Shiva wrote a prayer called Radhakripa Kataksha. So in Radhakripa Kataksha, he's glorifying Radharani in many shlokas. Apara Siddhi Riddhi Digda Sattva Angalinake. Angalinaka. Angali means toes. Naka means a nail. So he's saying dig means directions. Apara Siddhi Riddhi Digda Sattva Angalinake. Unlimited perfections. Apara, unlimited cities, perfections and riddhis, unlimited wealth and unlimited perfections, they emanate in all directions from where? From simply the toenails of Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani ki jai. And these then, and the that is the origin of Siddhi, the original Adi Siddhi and Adi Riddhi is Radharani's toenails. Or some distant expansion of Radharani's toenails. Distant expansion of Radharani's toenails have taken the form of Ganapati's two wives, Riddhi and Siddhi. Success and prosperity. If anyone pleases Lord Ganesh with nice prayers and worship, the person also attains the company or blessings of the wives of Lord Ganesh. Riddhi Devi Ki, Siddhi Devi Ki. However, if used improperly, success and prosperity can be distractions on the path towards the goal of spiritual wisdom. Of course, this book is written by a preacher, by a devotee of ISKCON, so my godbrother, it's always, it's quite different than a revered Swami's book. How did the elephant, how did he get his elephant's head? There are many different versions of the story, but generally we accept it as follows. Ganesha has different symbols. He has one tusk and four hands, two of which hold a noose and a hook. The noose is like a rope with a little loop in it. He holds this to catch delusion, to free one from its effects. Like you have it's like a lasso when they catch a little calf or something running away, stray calf, they throw a cowboy. So he has this noose, this rope, like catch. So he catches illusion and frees us from illusion. The noose also represents attachment that can lead to anger, which hurts us, like the goad. The noose or rope is also used to pull his devotees nearer to the truth and to tie them down to the highest God. The Ankush, you know, the Ankush is this shape like this. It has a point and a shape like this. It's for hooking the elephant behind the ear, for controlling the elephant. The hook or the goad indicates his power and helps motivate one towards the goal. Sometimes he's shown holding an axe, which he uses to cut off worldly attachments. Very amazing. Everybody in Bombay is worshipping Ganesh. They don't know what they're getting into. Om Sri Ganeshaya Namah, Om Sri Ganeshaya Namah. You know, please give us Siddhi and Riddhi, Siddhi Dehi, Riddhi Dehi, Paisa, Rupees, Ruble, Rubies Dehi. And then, okay, and then, what's this chopper for anyway? Oh, you don't know, that's for cutting off all your material attachments. So he blesses you, you get all this puja, and he blesses you with all kinds of wealth, which you buy all kinds of objects and possessions and become very, very attached to them. Your car and watch and house and this and that. And then on one side he's giving you all this money to get attachments. On the other side he's chopping off all your attachments. Very interesting. Someone should say, do you know who you're worshipping? He's going to chop you. Why do you, that chopper is for you. On the other two hands, one is pointed in a gesture for giving blessings and assuring fearlessness, and the other is holding a rice ball. Ganesha's hand that gives blessings shows that he can grant one's desires and assure freedom from fear, and he's beyond the influence of time and space wherein fear exists. Interesting. When you go beyond the influence of time and space, there's no more fear. Because time and space is the material sphere. And when you transcend the material sphere, then there's no more fear. In this way, he blesses all and offers protection from all obstacles on the spiritual path. The rice ball indicates the reward of the sadhana, or spiritual practice, for the devotees. He has a rice ball in his hand, sweet ball. Oh, you did good devotion, good sadhana. Okay, here, you can have it. What is that rice ball? It represents siddhi, right? His two wives were siddhi, siddhi and riddhi. Well, that's the perfection. What do we want? What is the siddhi of bhakti? Prem siddhi. That is it. That is the siddhi of bhakti, is prem. Bhakti, bhav, and prem. Priti, prem. The sadhya, the prayojan or goal, the final point is the perfection, is prem. And that can be awarded by the guru, by the Lord. So the sweet ball in his hand represents the attainment of that goal, the fruit. The fruit on the tree, the final product of the tree, is the fruit which you eat and relish, become nourished and satisfied. So the fruit on the tree of sadhana, the tree of devotion, or endeavor, upasana, the fruit is love of God, pure love of God, the ecstatic experience of serving the Lord with pure love. He has a stomach and he has a big stomach and large ears. The fat belly of Ganesh indicates the influence of the material manifestation is within him. His big ears represent that he accepts the truthful and positive vibrations while throwing out the false and non-virtuous words that men may present to him. On his flag is a mouse, which is also his carrier. Interesting sign. Usually people have some very powerful symbol on their flag, a lion, an eagle. Here he is, a mouse. Wow, that's a powerful king. He's flying a mouse on his flag. What was on Arjun's flag? Kapidwaj. Kapidwaj, right? Kapi means monkey. Kapi also means red. Kapi, the word kapi means red, because monkey has what on the backside? Red. Deities of Ganesh are often covered with red vermilion. Represents the red, this vermilion, like you see also in Hanuman deities, all that red stuff. This red represents the reddish complexion of one who is absorbed in work, which causes the intensified circulation of blood to all parts of the body. Thus, it produces a red glow in the skin. That's interesting. He represents hard work. His red body represents the reddish face you get when you really work out. Interesting. Ganesh is also the lord of action. He's often seen smeared with red vermilion. He also worships red flowers. Since he works wholeheartedly, he has a strong appetite. And thus he's offered and enjoys a steady supply of sweets and delicacies. As Vigneshwara, Ganesh gives us the gifts that destroy obstacles, restrictions, and hindrances. All the obstacles exist in the arena of time and space. Through the access of immortality, the single tusk that he has represents the one truth, while the broken tusk indicates the imperfections of the ever-changing material world. He lost his broken tusk when Parasaram once arrived at Mount Kailash to see Lord Shiva. Shiva was sleeping. Ganesh did not allow Parasaram to get in. They started fighting. Ganesh lost one tusk, so that he didn't throw it at the moon in this case. It's another kalpa. That's from Padma Purana. That missing tusk was later used as a pen to write the Mahabharata when it was dictated by Vyasadeva to Ganesh. I guess he lost it in the fight with Parasaram, but he didn't want to throw it away, so he kept it around. Then later on he used it as elephants are also very practical. We can learn from this. They don't waste any energy. He said, look, I broke this tusk. I can't immediately use it in my, but I'll keep it aside here and make them in the future useful. That's very interesting. He's really practical in that way. Ganapati ki jai. This is interesting. The mouse carrier of Ganesh is often seen in pictures eating or stealing the sweets that are piled up near Ganesh. Ganesh's mouse is taking a little bit extra perks here for carrying such a heavy load. I guess he doesn't feel he's getting paid sufficiently. That's what happens when the servants get underpaid and they steal a little bit, isn't it? So maybe he's being underpaid, so he's snitching a few ladus here and there. The mouse represents the desire to enjoy material pleasures and the danger of the ego. Though the mouse is small, its desire for material happiness and the driver that motivates one into action to acquire such pleasure is like a thief that takes away all that people possess. This desire steals away one's life that could be used to acquire the goal of spiritual perfection to our true happiness and liberation. Mouse also represents the mind, which is always active. It takes much weight to keep the mind from going astray. The weight of an elephant, Ganesh, on the mouse represents controlling the mind. Thus Ganesh rides on this mouse as a controller of material desire and the effects of illusion. That's interesting. The mouse, although it's small, it represents the ego and a desire for independent happiness. So the mouse can run all around the place and nibble here, nibble there, and steal something and eat stuff. But if some big fat elephant sits on the mouse and that stops all his movement, he can't go anywhere. His independent action has come to a standstill. So we need some elephant. We need some elephant to sit on our mind to keep our mouse-like mind from scurrying around eating all the cheese and broken pieces of Mahaprasad gadget lying here and there. So who is that elephant? The elephant is Sri Guru. Guru means heavy. The word Guru means heavy. So the Guru's instructions, Guru Vakya, Guru Vani, they become, there's a heavy weight that sits on the mouse-like mind of the disciple and keeps him from running around. Of course, the mouse may nibble a few of the Guru's sweets. May nibble some Guru Prasad here and there. That's permissible. You don't see any stories of Ganapati giving a swipe with his elephant trunk, knocking the mouse off or eating a few sweets. But he's sitting on him, he's controlling him, but he's allowing him a little space to move. Okay, eat a few sweets. The Guru does the same thing with the Shishya. He sits on his mind, he says, listen, stop all this nonsense. Mandamanabhava Madhbhakto Madhyaji Mandamaskuru Mame Vaisusi Satyante Pratijane Priyosine. Become a Krishna Priya. Become a Priya Jana of Radha. Radha Priya, Krishna Priya. Become dear to Radha and Krishna. Always think of Radha and Krishna. Love them with feelings. Chant their name with bhav. Serve them with feelings and attention and care and consideration. And always offer your mind and humility and submission at their feet and at their will. Namaskar. And worship them. Okay, take a little Mahaprasad. But don't, you can't go anywhere. So the Guru sits on the mouse. Ganesh is riding around, mostly sitting on the mouse, but when he's not sitting on the mouse, he gives him a little Mahaprasad. Only an elephant can subdue the mouse. The mouse weighs 50 grams, maybe 100 grams the mouse weighs. How many grams an elephant weighs? So it takes 1 million grams to control 100 grams. Interesting. 1 million grams to control. Mouse weighs 100 grams, an elephant weighs 1 million grams. So this heavy elephant has to sit on the mine, so there's nothing heavier than Sri Guru. Sri Ganapati ki jai. Now we're going to move into the spiritual Ganesh. Lord Brahma says in text 50, he's glorifying, of course, Krishna. Nishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anavyaja Govinda Sarvakarna Karanam Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. He's offering his loving respect and obeisances to the Lord of his heart and the Lord of his eyes and the Lord of his spurti. He had darshan of Krishna Vrindavan. And that created such an ocean of knowledge within him that he understood the whole ocean of truth just by seeing Krishna and hearing Krishna's flute. And with that revelation, he was able to reveal the entire Siddhanta, the whole Sambandha Videya Priyojana of the material world. What is God? What is this creation? What are the demigods? What is the relative and absolute position of God? The absolute position in relation to the world. Who is Shiva? Who is Parvati? Who is Ganesh? Who is Surya? These are the Panchapasana. He's Lord Brahma himself. Adi Kavi, the original poet and the first disciple. Adi Guru Krishna, Adi Shishya Brahma. He himself is praying, Yat Pada Palava Yugam Dinadaya Kumbha Dvandve Pranama Samaye Saganadi Raja Vignan Vihantamalam Asya Jagatrayasya Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Lord Brahma said, I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, whose lotus feet are always held by Ganesh upon a pair of tumalai protruding from his elephant head in order to obtain power for his function of destroying all the obstacles on the path of progress of the three worlds. So this elephant's head, if you've ever seen an elephant, he has two slight convexities, kind of dome line, goes a little like this and goes down in the middle and goes up like this. It's called tumalai in Sanskrit. So on these two bumps of his head, he's holding the feet of Govinda, Krishna, and he's getting his power from there. And the Jiva Goswami gives a commentary on this verse, and he explains that, of course, Govinda has Ananta Rupam, he has many different forms, and one of the forms of Govinda is that the Govinda himself is Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna, Govinda, Adi Purusham. He's the original first person, first Purusha. The first Purushottam is Govinda, Gopal, Sri Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna. But he's the Sarva Avatari. He's the source of all the avatars and all the various expansions of Godhead. So one of those expansions is Lord Shiva. One expansion is Lord Nrisimhadev. Jiva Goswami is telling in his commentary here that the form of the Lord that he's, it's Govinda, but it's actually the feet of Govinda in the form of Lord Nrisimhadev. That's why we say, the Vaishnavas say that for us, it's for example, you go to some secretary of the treasury, so I want to have a big donation, I want to have big money. He said, actually, I am only secretary. I'm only managing the money of Bill Gates. Really, if you want to get the big money, you should go to Bill Gates. I'm the intermediary for the money, but actually it's his money. If you can go directly to him, then you get more money, more direct access. So the person says, all right, the materialists are satisfied to approach Ganesh, and they're happy with that and what they receive, because they only want things of the material sphere. But then someone might question, well, where does Ganesh get his power? Well, he's getting his power from the feet that are on his head. It's parampara. My feet are at my guru's. My head is at my guru. My power is from the feet of my guru. My head is at the feet of my guru. Mande guru Sri Charanaravindam. Sri Guru Charanaravindam. Aravindam. Aranaravindam. The lotus feet of my guru, that's where my head is placed. Sharanagati. My head is submitted there. So my power is coming there. Guru Kripa. Guru Shakti. And my guru is getting his power because his head is at the feet of his guru. Ganesh is getting his power because his head is at the feet of Govinda, as Lord Brahma is telling. And that form of Lord Govinda, whom he has his feet on, is none other than the Srimadeva. So actually the source of destroying obstacles, the source of destroying impediments and obstacles, is not actually Ganesh, but Lord Nisringadeva. In the same way, there's two Saraswatis. There's Saraswati and there's Divya Saraswati. Sometimes she is called Shuddha, Shud. We have S-U-D-D-H-A, Shud. Shud Saraswati means the pure Saraswati, the original Saraswati. Divya means transcendental. The consort, or one of the consorts of Lord Narayan, is Saraswati, Shuddha Saraswati. She's the goddess of spiritual learning, spiritual mantras, spiritual poetry, spiritual music. Then she has an expansion as the wife, or sometimes it's called the daughter, generally called the wife, of Lord Brahma, who is also known as Saraswati. Saraswati is worshipped by every child in India to pass their high school and college grades. Saraswati. They have a poster on their wall, and they worship three goddesses, Lakshmi Devi, Saraswati, and Durga. You saw? And Mahalakshmi, Mahadurga, and Ma Saraswati, or whatever. Who's in the middle? Usually have in the middle Durga, I think so. Durga is usually in the middle. Then the right side is Lakshmi or Saraswati. Right is Lakshmi, right of Durga is Lakshmi. Durga's right side. I would think in terms of the hierarchy that I've learned, which I've been teaching all along. Always think, who is the senior? Remember? Where is the position of the senior? Right side. If you have Durga in the middle, that's because those are Durga worshippers. They'll put Durga in the middle, whoever makes the posters. So they think, oh, she's the middle. The middle person's the big one. But actually, the person in the right, the pole position, or the person in the right-hand position, that's considered where the senior person stays. The more respected or elder, more powerful. Man is always in the right of the woman. And an elder person is always in the right of the junior person. This is etiquette from the spiritual world all the way down. Lakshmi Devi is in the far right, from their viewpoint. I find Durga on my right is Lakshmi, and the left is Saraswati. Is it right? I think so. This is from Bhagavatam. This is a teachings of Lord Krishna to Uddhava, called Uddhava Gita. This is the Archana Upasana chapter, the process of deity worship, chapter 27, verse 29. Durgam Vinayakam Vyasam Vishvaksenam Gurun Suran Sve Sve Stane Tabi Mukam Pujayet Prakshanadibi. With offerings such as Prokshana, one should worship Durga, Vinayaka, Vyas, Vishvaksena, the spiritual masters, and the various demigods. All these personalities should be in their proper places facing the deity of the Lord. So these are some details about different subsidiary pujas that are done along with the worship of the main Murti or Archimurti in a mandir, about bathing and snan and puja and Bhog and all these details. Jiva Goswami gives a commentary here. He's saying that in this world, Ganesh is famous for awarding financial success. And Shiva is famous as the external illusory potence of the Lord. The personalities mentioned in this verse are eternally liberated associates of the Lord, who reside in the spiritual sky beyond the material manifestation. In various Vedic literatures, Jiva proves that the name of Durga may indicate the internal potency of the Lord, Swarup Shakti, who is non-different from him. This point is being made. It's also made in the Brahma Samhita that Durga and Shiva and Ganesh, they are residing in the material world, but they have a counterpart or prototype, an original form in the spiritual world also. And they're serving in there. There's a very interesting point in Nectar Devotion. It's talking about the 64 limbs. It talks about aparadhas against the deity. And said that one should, to worship Lord Vishnu, one must first worship Lord Ganesh to get free from offenses. One should begin the worship of the demigod Ganapati to drive away impediments in the execution of devotional service. Prabhupada was asked about this, and he was saying that in the commentaries that this, of course, this quote is from Padma Purana about general deity worship. For Gaudiya Vaishnava is to worship Lord Vishnu without worshiping the Sringadeva first. This is what we actually have to do, worship Lord Sringadeva. So rather, we don't worship Lord Ganesh ourselves as Vaishnavas. We worship Lord Nisringadeva, who is giving the power directly. Because we are worshippers of Vishnu, we're not interested in the fruits and promotion of this material world. We're interested in going to the spiritual world to worship Krishna, to worship Nisringadeva. So there's a little pastime describing about some of the different aspects of ecstatic love. And once, while watching the rasa dance of Krishna and the gopis, Shiva beheld the beautiful face of Krishna and he began to dance. Of course, he couldn't see the gopis because he's in Purushabha. So when he was hearing all the music and Shiva came on Nandi to Vrindavan, he glanced, but he wasn't able to see the gopis. Arjuna could not see the Virata Rupa until Krishna gave him divine eyes. It was there, but it was invisible till he gave eyes. Divya Drishti. He was in Purushabhiman, so Lord Shiva couldn't see the gopis because they're Prakriti, Krishna's Shaktis. But another time he did austerity and became Gopishwara. He got Gopi Sarup. But this time he came and he was so excited to see Krishna dancing. He's Vrindavan Nataraj. He's also Nataraj. Shiva is known as Nataraj for his Tandava. But Krishna is known as Vrindavan Nataraj, especially in the rasa dance. But Shiva wanted to see. He was so ecstatic about it, he started playing his din-din drum. While he was dancing in ecstasy, then he brought his son along, because fathers oftentimes, when they go for a ride here and there, they bring their sons with them in the car. Hey, look, I'm going to the mall. Why don't you come with me? So Shiva said, listen, I'm going down and taking a spin down to the rasa dance. Why don't you come with me? So Ganapati went with him. And then he saw that, and then he started dancing along with his father. Because this is told, it's an offense in deity worship if you don't first worship Vignesh. So I already read that commentary. That we become free from that. We worship Lord Nisringadeva. How do we worship Lord Nisringadeva? That means every devotee has to have a deity of Lord Nisringadeva? Yeah, you can worship by singing the mantra. Namaste Narasringaya. Pralada la da dayane. Chaitanya Charitamrita ki. Lord Chaitanya, 500 years ago, was touring all over South India. Visited many, many provinces and many famous old deities, Udupi, Guruvayur, Sri Rangam, Sri Kanchi, Benares, Kashi, Allahabad, everywhere. He went to the kingdom of Vrindavan, Pandarpur, Kanyakumar, and he would go here and there, and he was very respectful to all the different temples. And he went to one temple of Lord Shiva called Vishveshwara. And it's told that Vaishnavas generally do not visit demigod temples, but Mahaprabhu regularly visited the temple, and this is because Vishveshwar is the predominating deity of Varanasi. Varanasi, of course, is a famous place even today. And there's a famous Shiva temple there, Vishveshwar. And he would visit there. How is it that Mahaprabhu was visiting, he's a Vaishnava sannyasi, but he's visiting the Shiva temple? What is the answer? A Vaishnava does not behave disrespectfully towards demigods. A Vaishnava gives proper respect to everyone, although he never accepts a demigod to be as good as the Lord. There are mantras offering obeisances in the Brahma Samhita to Shiva, Brahma, the sun god, and Ganesha, as well as Vishnu. Vaishnavas can also worship all these demigods, but only on the principles of Brahma Samhita, which is recommended by Mahaprabhu. All the demigods are servants of Krishna. They're not equal to Krishna. All the demigods should be accepted as personal demigods, but they all serve the order of the Supreme Person, Personality of Godhead. So it's a matter of seeing the hierarchy and seeing the connection. They are independent of the Lord. The minister is given, is delegated power. The king, when the king takes over the throne, then he appoints various secretaries and ministers, as we see in the life of Rupa Goswami. He was encouraged to join Hussein Shah's government and be a minister. So his power, it was delegated, it was given, as long as he was a minister, he had power given to him by the emperor, but as soon as he was fired or quit the job, then the power was withdrawn. So demigods are like that. A demigod is actually a post. Different jivas take that post and serve in the material world, and they're given their power by Krishna or God. Mahaprabhu personally set an example by visiting holy places. When a Vaishnava visits a temple of a demigod, his vision of that demigod is different from the vision of the materialist or Mayavadi. A Vaishnava's visit to a temple of Lord Shiva is different from a non-devotee's visit. So this is important. We may go to some city and we have some friends or relatives. Oh, do you want to go to the Shiva temple, this Siddhi Vinayak? We don't say no, we don't go. Okay, we go. I went to Siddhi Vinayak. Everyone should follow in the footsteps of Mahaprabhu and visit all temples. The problem is not that we go out of our way and take extra time and, oh, let's go to Kedarnath. Maharaj, let's go to Kedarnath and visit Shiva temple. Let's go on Chardham Parikrama, the North Uttarakhand Chardham Parikrama, and visit Gangotri, Jamunotri, Badrinath, and Kedarnath. We don't do that because we're already in Vrindavan. There's no need for us. It is not anukul for bhakti. We're satisfied here. We're engaged here. If we have seva there, we're going there for preaching or for some spiritual activities. Then we can go. And otherwise, for sightseeing or touring or traveling, there's no purpose to go. It's not that, oh, Lord Chaitanya visited all these temples. Okay, let's go. We're following Lord Chaitanya. Let's go visit all the temples in South India, all the Shiva and Durga temples. Guru Mukha Padmavakya Chiti Te Koriyakya. If we have seva, if our guru orders us to go there, distribute Prabhupada's books or preach, then we go. Otherwise, we don't have any particular desire or need to go there. Well, this is our Ganesh. This is a special day for Ganapati. We understand his relative position. In other words, his position of authority is related to other demigods, and he's getting his power from the Lord, and he also has some seva to perform in Vaikuntha, in the spiritual realm. He's also there. I guess he's entertaining the Lord. He's a very funny god. Maybe he sits next to Narayan in the spiritual world, and Narayan throws him laddus or something. We can't understand too much about his particular activities. I never read it. Ganesh Lilamrita. There may be some book, Ganesh. I mean, there's Govinda Lilamrita. I don't know about Ganesh Lilamrita. But they collected Astikali Lila Lord Ganesh. I don't know. But I'm sure he has many wonderful pastimes. But Because the Lord and His devotees are always having unlimited pastimes together. This is Ganesh Chaturthi. We thought we should hear something about Ganapati Ganesh. But our main focus is to hear and chant about Radha and Krishna 24 hours a day. Our approach to Shiva or Durga or Ganesh or any one of these demigods or semigods is that they're very, very powerful persons. They're very, very dear to the Lord. They're Vaishnavas, they're devotees. They're not demons, they're not asuras. They're very powerful, they're very pure. Ganesh seems to represent more the humorous side of life. And a lot of dichotomies and opposites, many opposites are there. Elephant riding on a mouse and eating unlimited sweets and being the lord of the brahmacharis. And his wives are Siddhi and Riddhi, and very interesting lord. And his whole, how he's created, Durga created him from some sandalwood paste on her body. It's a very special thing. India, one thing is that India, living in India and hearing about these exploits and lives of the various gods in their various forms, it really stretches your imagination. It stretches your imagination and nourishes the inconceivable aspect of our brains. That God is infinite. Which means that we are finite. That we, without any argument, we can admit how finite and how limited we are. We are certainly limited in so many ways, and certainly finite in so many ways. The very definition of God is He's infinite in all ways. In dimension and power and influence and abilities and time. Kalosmi. The question arises, how can the finite understand the infinite? It's impossible. It's only possible if the infinite agrees to reveal himself to the finite. All of these aspects of the Godhead, all these devis and devas, they're all well-wishers, they're all friendly emissaries, ambassadors of God. And we should have a healthy outlook and feelings towards all of them. It's not that we love one and hate the others, and we don't despise them. But we're not attached to them. And one of the most important things about Krishna Bhakti is to be eknishta. The term is eknishta. Very important, because without being eknishta, one cannot get siddhi. One cannot attain perfection in bhakti sadhana. Because of conditioning, because of purva samskaras and conditioning, especially in India, people are very attached to the previous modes of life, previous modes of worship, due to Rajagun or Sattvagun for many births. Many people are attached to worshipping Shiva, Ganesh, and other demigods, even when they come to the fold of the transcendental bhakti, which is beyond all demigods, beyond all parameters and concerns of the material world. They're attached, and they're fearful. And they're not eknishta. Okay, I worship Krishna, Radha Krishna, but I do a little puja for Ganesh also. I keep my little Ganapati Didi, I keep my little Shiva Linga, I have my little Lakshmi Yantra or whatever. You guys are not, they haven't come to the platform of Eknishta. That I'm not convinced 100%. I don't have Shuddha Shraddha, I don't have pure faith that simply and only by worshipping Bhagavan Sri Krishna I will attain everything. I will attain Riddhi and Siddhi and Sukh and Moksha and Mukti and Mukti and Bhukti and Sukti and everything, Yukti. I'll attain Yukti and Sukti and Bhukti and Mukti, everything I'll attain just from Krishna Puja. Okay, yes, I'm a Krishna Bhakta, I've taken Krishna Diksha, I have Diksha Mantra, Gopal Mantra, I have a name Krishna Das, but you know I fast every Monday. Because I did when I was a teenager. I fasted every Monday and I got such a wonderful husband. So I don't want to show my ingratitude toward Shiva. I want to be nice to him. But actually, that's only a test from Shiva. She was saying, why are you holding on? What's wrong with you? Let go. Why don't you become eknishta? Because a servant, you ask someone, who is your master? Everyone's my master. But what do people say? They say that a servant of all is a servant of none. Ek Nishtha. We heard of the glories of Ganesh and his phenomenal powers and his funny pastimes and his extraordinary origin and his position even in Vaikuntha in the spiritual world. Now, how much elevated he must be that God's feet are on his head. Where are we and where is Ganesh? Are we holding the feet of God on our head? The only thing on our head is lust. But what's sitting on our head? Lust. Kam, krodh, lobh, moh, mada, matsarya. That's what's sitting on our head. The 2 feet of lust. Kam, rup. Kam, swayam, kam, rup. The form of lust and greed is on our head. More money, more food, more women, more men. Lust, greed, envy. Well, this is what's on our head. But Ganesh, on his head, he's holding the feet of God. Is that a small achievement? That means he's in samadhi. Yama, niyama. Asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhruvana, smriti, samadhi. What does samadhi mean? Ek nishtha. Samadhi means samadhi. Samadhi, D, intelligence. Everything is collected to the one. Everything is fixed on one point. All your intelligence, all your concentration is one point. The tip of your nose, a candle flame, a mantra, soham, a rupam, the chaturbhuj narayana in the heart. This is samadhi. 1,000 years, 1,000 lifetimes, 1,000 hours of practice. To fix the mind on the feet of the Lord. This is the perfection of Jnana Yoga, Paramatma Yoga. And he's got the feet of the Lord on his head 24 hours a day. This is Ganapati. So therefore he's great, we're small. He's a big Bharabhakta, big devotee. But he's not the end and be all and end all. That's not where it stops. We go to Ganapati and say, please give us a feet of Nrisingadeva. When we go to Nrisingadeva and say, please give us a feet of Govinda. I go to Govinda and say, please give us a feet of Radha. Radha Ashraya. Gopi Bhartu Pada Kamalero, Das Das and the Das. So this is a day, this is Shiva's, I mean, this is Ganesha's birthday. So the best way to worship Ganesh, the best way to worship Durga, the best way to worship Shiva is to serve Krishna. That's all. Ek Nishtha. Or do you think that if you dedicate 24 hours a day, every day of your life, being Ek Nishtha, being fixed in one Ishta, one completely fixed and concentrated on the service of Radha and Krishna, that you'll fail? That Shiva will be upset? What is this? You didn't fast on Monday? You didn't keep your Monday fast? What is this? You broke your vow? You broke your butt? You became Hare Krishna? You took my linga off the altar and put it in the Jamuna? You did Visarjan? You put my picture of Durga in the Jamuna along with your grandmother's picture? This kind of sentimentality. Sentiments are good, but misplaced sentiments are foolish. Ultimately, what is bhakti? Bhakti is all about sentiments, but these are alokik bhav, atma priti, atma bhav, atma bhajan. This is we want to pass go and collect $200 in the Monopoly game. Park Place, $500. Broadway, this that. Pass go and collect 200 rupees. We want to pass Ganapati and collect. Eternal service of the lotus feet of Radharani. So we pray to Ganapati for a ticket. Give us a ticket. We pray to. You see, give us a ticket to the feet of Narasimha. We pray to Narasimha, give us a ticket to Govinda. Pray to Govinda, give us a ticket. This is one big problem of Indians is they have all these demigod anchors. They have one boat called the human body, and there's one ocean called the Bhavasagar. It's called Bhavasagar, the ocean of material existence. This body is a noka. This is a noka. And this guru is Nokadara. Nokadara. He's the captain. Nokadara. He's the captain of this noka, this boat. And this Bhavasagar. But then we have this anchor that anchor.
You got anchors, three anchors out the each side of the front of the boat, three anchors out each side of the back. The captain gets on, okay, let's go. What's this? You got three anchors in the front, three anchors in the back. I can't, hey, you got to pull out these anchors. And then he starts chopping and cutting the ropes to these anchors, because sadhu means cut. Sadhu means to cut. So he takes out his knife of shastra. Shastra. Shastra dhatu. Shastra means shastra. Trani dhatu. Shastra dhatu. He cuts. Hey, you don't need this Shiva, you don't need this Durga, you don't need grandma, grandpa. Ekishta. Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Eki David, Eki Deva Putra, Devaki Putra. You know, there's Shankaracharya writes Gita Mahatmyam. Adi Shankara wrote Gita Mahatmyam. Very much he liked Bhagavad Gita, so he wrote the Gita Mahatmyam. Eko Deva, Devaki Putra. He said, let there be one Deva, Devaki Putra. Let the Putra, the son of Devaki, Devaki Nandan, Sri Krishna, Mathura, let him be the one God. Ekam Shastram, Gita Upanishadam. Eka Shastram, Gita Upanishad. Let there be one Shastra, Gita Upanishad. It is an Upanishad. The Gita is actually Upanishad. Because all the Upashandic teachings are in Gita. There's 108 Upanishads, major ones. Actually, it's hundreds and hundreds of Upanishads. Hundreds. 108 major, Ekshavat, Upanishads. Major, across the board recognized. It's called Gita Upanishad. Bhagavad Gita is in Mahabharata. It's in a chapter in Mahabharata. But yet, Shankaracharya is saying, Gita Upanishad. Upanishad Shiromani is the crest jewel of all the Upanishads. It has essence of Upanishads. Upanishads means to sit next to Bhagavan, sit next to Isha, Isha Upanishad. Upa Asana Shada. It means to sit next to Isha. Isha means controller God, supreme controller, supreme enjoyer, supreme proprietor. So Upanishads are supposed to make you sit next to the supreme reality, the supreme truth. Gita does nothing but that. Sarva Dharman Pratyajam Amekam Sharanam Vrajami. Surrender all gods, goddesses, forget everything. Yanti Deva Vrata Devan Pitran Yanti Prati Vrajana. Says you worship all these devas, you go to the devas. Says Yanti Bhutani Yanti Maji Ajinobhiman. You worship me, you come to me, he says. He said, Krishna tells in Gita, he doesn't say Yatamat Tatapat. Does Krishna teach that? No. So therefore, what is Krishna saying? Yanti Maji Ajinobhiman. He says, you worship me, you come to me. Ekishta Bhagavan, Bhagavan Ekishta, then Bhagavan Prapti, Vaikuntha Prapti, Vishnu Loka Prapti, Goloka Prapti, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan, Yanti Pitri Vrati Vrata. You worship Pitris, you go to Pitri Loka. You worship Devas, you go to Deva Loka. Yanti Bhuteja, Bhuteja. You worship Bhutas and Pretas, you go to Bhuta Loka. You go to Pitri Loka, you go to Pitris, Bhutas, as you go to these planets. He says four paths. In Gita, it says four paths. Four. He says charpat, char. What is it? Yatapat. Charmat, charpat. Whatever. Four paths, four goals. He says four paths, four goals. Why does he say four paths? Three in Tamagun, one Vishuddha Sattva. Four paths. Worship, boots and praise, Tamagun. Worship ancestors, Rajagun, Pitri. Worship Deva, Sattva. That's three paths. Fourth path, Vishuddha Sattva. Pure goodness, transcendental, alaukik path. Alaukik path. You understand, this is Gita, Bhagavad Gita. Nothing secret. No esoteric truths. Krishna's telling me four paths. There's four paths. Four. You worship these four paths, you get four different results. And then all India is mesmerized and hypnotized and bewildered by this ridiculous ashastric philosophy of Vivekananda. Yatamatatapa. It's all one, man. It's all paths we do. You know. There's nine holes, Navadvara, there's nine holes in the body. So you put food in any hole, it goes, it gets the same result. You take your pizza, put it in your ear. It'll go to your, it'll make all your nails and hair grow. You just put it in your ear. It's also a hole. Your mouth is a hole. Your nose, put the pizza up your nose. No, the food has to go in this hole to go to the stomach to be digested and nourish the whole body. There's only one hole that works, isn't it? Hole in one. The same thing. You worship, but it's not Yatapat. This is a, what is this? It's a little jingo lingo. It's like selling shampoo or something. Da 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 bingo, da 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 jingo. But this is not Shastra. This is not Shastra Siddhanta. This is not Shastra Yukti. Shastra Yukti, the logic, the reason of Shastra. Shastra is reasonable. Shastra is reality. Shastra is perfect. The Shabda, that's alokik. Alokika, alokik vastu. Transcendental substance, transcendental reality. There's not some transitory, ephemeral ideas from your pipe dream mind. Here today, gone tomorrow. What is this? This philosophy came in 1890, and hardly anybody. This is a ridiculous philosophy. Gita is thousand years old. Gita is as old as Suryadev. Krishna says, Imam Rajarshya, he says, I spoke this knowledge to the sun god 120 million years ago. Krishna says, Arjuna, what I'm teaching you now on the battlefield, I already spoke to Suryadev 120 million years ago. Imam Vibhashite Yogam. Vidushan, Manava Praha. He says, I spoke to Vidushan, he spoke to Manu and Ikshvaku. Manu's millions of years ago. Manvantaras. Gita's not new stuff. It's not age of, what is it? What is it? Art of living. I have something new for you. Acha, old age is new. Disease is new. Death is new. You can tell me about these things. There's something new. You have something, art of living. You're going to teach me the art of not getting old, the art of not getting disease, the art of not dying. You can teach me the art of liberation. And forget about living, that's all part of dying. You have to teach me the art of living. You eat, pass through, and sleep. That's living. Why don't you teach me the art of liberating? Liberating. Like living? Teach me the art of liberating. Liberating. Teach me Muktipat. Can you teach me Muktipat? No, I don't know what it is. Yatamantatapa. Ganapati Maharaja ki jai. Sri Ganapati Arvatiti Motsav ki. Bhakta Ganapati ki jai. Shankar Bhagavan ki jai. Shankarshan Bhagavan ki jai. Ramchandra Bhagavan ki jai. Ananda Kanda Bhagavan Sri Krishna ki jai. Jai Jai Sri Radhe.